If you'd look with me at 1 Timothy chapter 3, as I mentioned this morning, we've got three qualifications left to go, but next week we're going to combine faithful children and having his children in submission. But regarding the qualifications for elders that are listed in 1 Timothy chapter 3 and Titus chapter 1, there are two which really seem to have a real divergence of opinion, even within faithful members of the church as to their meanings. And those are faithful children. Does that mean all of your children? Does it mean you have to have more than one child? Does it mean if you have 17 kids and one of them's unfaithful, you're not qualified? Or does it mean you have 17 kids and as long as one of them's a Christian, you're good to go? We're going to be looking at that, even if the other 16 are devil worshipers. It's okay because you got one faithful child, right? Anyway, we'll talk about that next week. The other one that really seems to have a divergence of opinion within faithful members of the church is the qualification husband of one wife. And it's interesting that that is really the first qualification that Paul gives. He says, First Timothy chapter 3 and verse 2, he says, a bishop then must be blameless. And we said that some people view that as the only qualification for an elder, and that everything he says after that, that's where you look to see if they're blameless. But the first one he mentions after that is husband of one wife. So we're going to look at what this phrase literally means. We're going to look at all the different interpretations that I could think of. And if for some reason I missed one, tell me afterwards and we'll just have another whole lesson on that one, if that's okay with you. But we're going to look at the various interpretations and meanings given to that phrase. We're going to look at what it literally means, how it was historically used, and how it fits in with all the other qualifications. And hopefully by the end of tonight's sermon, we will have a firm grasp on what Paul means when he says a bishop or elder must be the husband of one wife. But first, we're going to look at what some of the prevailing opinions are throughout the brotherhood. First off, some people say it only means that an elder cannot be a polygamist. He cannot be married to more than one person at a time. Well, a polygamist is someone who's married to more than one person at the same time. It's specifically a man married to more than one woman. Poly means multiple or more than one, and the part that's from gamist is the Greek word for woman, so it means many women. But many so-called church fathers from 100 A.D. to 300 A.D. believe that that's what Paul was talking about. The only thing that he was talking about in that instance was an elder must not be a polygamist. Well, I didn't write down any of the names, but some of them you might recognize. But is that really what Paul's trying to get across regarding elders? I say no, because all children of God, all Christians, are commanded by God to have only one spouse, no more. You can obviously be single, as Paul was, but if you are married, you are limited to one spouse at a time. 1 Corinthians chapter 7 and verse 2, Paul says, "Nevertheless, to avoid fornication, let every man have his own wife, singular, and let every woman have her own husband, singular, only one. You are not allowed to be married to multiple people under the law of Christ." It's not a command that all must be married, but the ones who are married, by that verse alone, are banned from polygamy. It is a sin to be a polygamist, and if you're a Christian. Well, it's a sin to be a polygamist even if you're not a Christian. It's a sin under the New Testament to be a polygamist. And elders, we said, are to be blameless. So when we looked at all these different qualifications, like an elder must be patient, an elder must be hospitable, it means that they are to be the cream of the crop. They are to be the most hospitable, the most patient in the congregation, the most unlikely to get in a fist fight over things, as we talked about a few weeks ago. So how exactly does someone get to be the most married to one person? Well, it's a fact. Either you're married or you're not married. You can't be more married or less married. If Paul, as many within the Lord's church assert, wrote this only against polygamy, how does that separate elders from any other Christians? All Christians are under the command, be married, or if you're going to be married, it's only to one person, no more. It's a sin for someone to have multiple wives under the New Testament. And we see in 1 Corinthians chapter 5, those who are involved in sexual sins, or they're in sexual unions with those who are not their own wife, singular, they were to be withdrawn from by the church. Paul told them, you are to withdraw from this person who is in this adulterous relationship. That's what it would be if you married a second wife. It would be an adulterous relationship. No man would ever get to the point of even being considered to be an elder if he was a polygamist, because if they were a faithful church, they would have already withdrawn from the man, because he is living in an adulterous situation. And that being the case, it would be like saying an elder must not be in a homosexual marriage. Well, we know that already. If someone was in such a union, they would be withdrawn from already. They would never be in consideration for an elder. One of my teachers, whenever he says, you know, just look at these things, you know, common sense. His phrase is, that's a big bag of duh. You know, it's like, you ought to figure that out by now. Your common sense should tell you that. So Paul wouldn't be writing to say you can't be a polygamist, because those people would have already been withdrawn from. They would never have been under consideration in the first place. So if it is only against polygamy, Paul's basically giving a redundant qualification, because nobody would have, that wouldn't have been an issue for any faithful congregation to begin with. If it's written against polygamy only, then it becomes the only qualification for an elder that does not have any reference to the man's character. Every one of these references, every one of these qualifications has to do with the character of the man, unless this is the only exception. If this is the exception, and it's against polygamy, it's not a qualification about the character, it's a qualification of his marriage certificate. Does he have more than one at a time? An elder can't be a polygamist, not because of this qualification, but because no Christian can be a polygamist and expect to get to heaven. Some people say it means that an elder must have only been married one time. And this stance has been taken by many throughout the years. I have a bunch of different commentaries on my computer. One of them said it means married only once. A guy named Alfred says it means to be married to his still living wife. However, you'll like this quote, right after he gets done saying that's what it actually means in Greek. He must be married to his still living wife, he claims. He says, however, how far such a prohibition is to be considered binding on us today, now that the Christian life has entered into another and totally different phase, is of course an open question for the present Christian to deal with at any time. So what he's saying is, this is what it means. This is what Paul was intending, whether or not that's truly the case. That's what he said. This is what Paul was intending. However, things have changed since then, so it's up to you if you decide it applies to you or not. You like that? That's some great reasoning. We can get out of anything in the Bible with that kind of reasoning. I read an article by a Baptist who said, yes, baptism was essential to get forgiveness of sins and to enter the church in the first century. However, things have changed. We no longer live back then. We live in a totally different time, and so it doesn't matter anymore. See? What kind of rationale you can get if you say that? A man named Vincent, in his word study, says it forbids a second marriage. However, in that same paragraph, I don't think Paul wrote this book. So, how much credence you want to give to some of these people is up to you. Barnes says it means if a man is married, he is only to be married once. And so what he's saying is this view means a man that has never been married fits the qualification. However, it does say husband of one wife. And if he decides to get married, that's it, just one wife ever. But Paul didn't say it was an optional matter. If you look there at verse 2, a bishop then must be blameless. And everything that comes after it is a requirement, not an optional thing. Well, some people say that it means an elder must have been married only once, and they say that Paul was intending to end the rampant divorce and remarriage that was going on throughout those cultures, all those divorces and remarriages. However, let us again look back at what Paul said in 1 Corinthians chapter 5. He said, any Christian who is involved in a sexual union outside of marriage, outside of a scriptural marriage, is to be withdrawn from. Period. End of story. Until they repent. If someone is divorced unscripturally and they are remarried, they are in an adulterous relationship, and they should be withdrawn from by the congregation. Paul shouldn't have to write to them saying, you know those divorced and remarried people that you've already withdrawn from? Don't consider them for elders. Common sense. Remember? Well, Jesus himself said anyone who divorced his wife for a reason other than fornication and then remarried was committing adultery. Adultery will send your soul to hell. if you are not, or if you do not repent of it. Galatians chapter 5, verses 19 through 21 lists the works of the flesh. That is one of the ones listed, is adultery. And those who do such things will not enter the kingdom of heaven. If you're in an adulterous marriage, if you are an adulterer, then you should be withdrawn from by the church. You will have, and there's no reason why Paul would ever even have to mention those people, because they would never be considered to be elders anyway. They would never have been under consideration. So obviously a man who's unscripturally divorced and remarried is not even a faithful child of God and shouldn't be considered for the eldership. If that's really what Paul was getting at, it's really another case of it being a redundant qualification. And I really don't think Paul would do that. Would Paul really say, those people you've withdrawn from are not qualified, so don't consider them? I think not. If it means elders can only be married once, then anyone who is an elder or aspires to be an elder is not permitted to do what Jesus said they could do and remarry if their spouse dies, or remarry if they have a scriptural divorce. Jesus gave that possibility. 1 Corinthians chapter 7 and verse 39, Paul says that, you know, if those widows, if the younger widows are to remarry, it's not a sin to get married after the death of a spouse. And Jesus said in Matthew chapter 19 and verse 9, only the guilty party is forbidden from to remarry. So if Paul's saying an elder can only be married once, he's going against what Jesus and Paul himself said was okay, was permissible under the law of Christ. But I want you to think about this for a second. Paul willingly gave up some of his liberties for the sake of weaker Christians. He said, if it's going to cause someone to stumble, I won't eat meat ever. He'd give that up willingly. But he makes sure that people know it is a liberty. It is something they can do. That he would give it up if it would help bring others to Christ. If Paul is saying you can only be married once, then Paul is commanding stronger Christians have no choice but to give up something that is a liberty, something that is permitted by Christ. A liberty is just that, something you are permitted to do. However, if Paul says an elder can't do that, then it's no longer a liberty. Does that seem to get confusing there for a second? We are at liberty to do it, but Paul, if that's what Paul's getting at here, then he is commanding them, you don't have that liberty anymore if you ever want to be an elder. Well, Paul's not going to speak out of both sides of his mouth on that topic. Either they can or they can't. Either it's a liberty or it's not a liberty. One man who I greatly respect lives in Arkansas. He retired after preaching for 50 years. He was in class and talking about the qualifications for elders, and he said, if a man is married to his living wife, first wife, he is the husband of one wife. Do you agree? Yes. He then said, if she dies, he is no longer the husband of one wife. He has zero wives. He is no longer qualified. And then he says, if the man gets remarried, he's not qualified because now he's got two wives. I really respect him, but his math skills leave a little bit to be desired. Either she counts while she's dead to begin with, or she doesn't count. You can't say, once she's died, she doesn't count, but once he gets remarried, she counts again. See what I mean? And if this is the case, though, if a man's wife dies and then he gets remarried and she counts again, then that makes all Christians who remarry after the death of their spouse in sin by having more than one wife. If she counts again. And we know that Paul says if a spouse dies, we are no longer bound to them. The marriage bond is no longer there. They are free to remarry. If it means married only one time, then that makes this qualification the only one out of all the qualifications that has nothing to do with the man's character and everything to do with his marriage certificate. He must only have one, ever. Some people say it means one wife at a time, and that's kind of what we were looking at when we mentioned polygamy. But basically, it's the idea that an elder must be married, scripturally, of course, and his wife must still be alive. Whether it be his first, second, or third scriptural wife, or even more, I guess, conceivably, as long as he is married to a living spouse scripturally, he fits this qualification, they say. Many say if a man's wife dies, he's no longer the present tense husband of one wife, but once he remarries, he's again qualified, being the husband of one wife. There was a preacher, and the story was told to me, and you'd recognize the name if I could, for the life of me, remember who it was. But in the 40s and 50s, this preacher was rather well known, and he was asked, if you were an elder and your wife died, what would you do? Now, the thrust of this question was, would you step down as an elder, or would you remain as an elder? It was basically asking, do you think the man can serve as an elder after the death of his wife? Well, the preacher's response showed what he believed on the subject. He said, if my wife died and I was an elder, I'd hurry up and get married as quick as I could, so I could still be qualified. Okay? I don't think that's what Paul's getting at here. The verse regarding a woman no longer being bound to her husband after he dies is used by those who say one wife at a time because it shows the marriage bond is broken by death, and therefore, if she dies, he's no longer the husband of one wife because he's no longer a husband. But it says no longer bound to her husband. It still calls her, still calls him the woman's husband even after he's dead. How many people do you know that whenever their spouse dies, they refer to them as the person I used to be married to? Now, if their spouse dies, they still refer to them as their wife. You know, my wife died. My wife has been dead for however many years, or my husband has been dead for so many years. But if this qualification means one wife at a time and the wife must be living, then it makes this qualification not a qualification for the elder, but actually a qualification for his wife. But if that's really what this is saying, then Paul is saying Bishop must be blameless. His wife must still be living. Well, that would make the first qualification nothing to do with the elder. It's a qualification for the wife. She must not have died. But it's the first qualification for blamelessness. It's a character trait, if we go by what the rest of these are. Since these are areas, again, of blamelessness, or areas in which the elder should be the cream of the crop. Remember, most patient, most hospitable, least given to wine, I guess, least of a striker, most apt to teach. If this means one wife at a time, and it means his wife hasn't died yet, then that means the elder's wife has to be the most not dead. You're either dead or you're not dead. Remember, this is supposed to be the cream of the crop. And if that means that he must have a living spouse, or that if that's really what it means, then how does that fit the fact that everything else is a character qualification and that it's really asking for the cream of the crop in all of these qualifications? Either someone is alive or they're not alive. There's no levels in between. Basically, though, those that take this view say it means the man must be married and scripturally married. Well, would we all agree to that? You know, an elder, if he is to be married, you know, whether his wife has died or whatever, an elder must not be in an unscriptural marriage. Do we agree to that? You know, because obviously he should be withdrawn from and never be an elder in the first place. All Christians who are married must be married scripturally, otherwise they're in adultery, and again, that will keep them out of heaven. You'll notice Paul never says an elder must be a Christian. You wonder why? Because he didn't need to. That was obvious. Paul didn't need to say an elder must be one who is not unscripturally married, because that kind of goes without saying. They would have withdrawn from him already if they were a faithful congregation. If this qualification means one wife at a time, or another way of saying not a polygamist but still married, then it's the only qualification that has nothing to do with man's character and depends only on the wife's death certificate or lack thereof and on his marriage certificate. Everything else deals with character. This is the only exception, if that's the case. So, I put forth to you, it doesn't mean married only once, nor do I put forth that it means married to one at a time, or married scripturally one at a time. Literally, the phrase is not husband of one wife, but a man of one woman, or another way of saying it is a one-woman man, or a one-woman type of man. This necessitates, first off, that an elder must be a man, because he specifically uses the gender-specific words there, a one-woman man. However, one commentator said, the decision on who to appoint for an elder should be based on the general principles laid down by the apostles as interpreted in the specific cultural context. In first century Ephesus and Crete, women church leaders may have been inappropriate. However, that doesn't mean the same applies in 21st century America or Europe. Basically, he's saying that husband of one wife can mean wife of one husband. Except Paul uses pretty specific words. If he wanted it to mean wife of one husband, he would have used the words he uses just a couple chapters later, talking about the widows that can be taken in by the church and cared for by the church. And he says, chapter 5 and verse 9 of 1 Timothy, "Let not a widow be taken in to the number under 80 years old, having been the wife of one man." Literally, that is a one-man woman. But it's interesting that the quote I just gave you was found immediately after the man insisted that the text itself literally said it had to be a man who was married to a woman. And then he says, but it doesn't apply today. Don't you just love those quotes? Thought you guys would enjoy those. But it also, not only does it necessitate that an elder must be a man, it necessitates a man who has entered into a marriage with a woman. Interestingly enough, this is not universally believed. There are denominational books and websites and some of our own, let's use a real nice phrase, goofball liberal brethren, have attempted to say it means if a man is married, then he must be the husband of one wife. If. You know, some people say, well, it's only a qualification if you're married. It's an optional thing. Well, Paul said must. Remember? Must be blameless. Must be the husband of one wife. Paul himself, we know, was not married. Timothy, we don't know for sure, but it appears he was not either. Neither one of them ever referred to themselves as an elder. They refer to themselves as apostle or evangelist, but never as an elder. Peter, we know, was married, and he made sure to point out in 1 Peter chapter 5, he was an elder as well. He was married. Paul was not. Timothy likely was not either. But it's interesting, they say, if a man is married. They say it's conditional, but again, 1 Timothy chapter 5, when the opposite phrase is used, one man, woman, well, that's not an optional thing. It's talking about widows. If they're widows, then that means they were married. You can't be a widow and not have ever been married. It's required within the phrase itself that marriage is under consideration. It's not an optional thing. He said a man must be the husband of one wife. It's also maybe a technical thing, but when you look at 1 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 2, it says a bishop then must be blameless, the husband of one wife. But the word "the" is not in the Greek text. It just says husband of one wife, or a husband of one wife, and that's a Greek rule sometimes that whenever it doesn't have the word "the" or "the" in front of it, it's illustrating the character of something or someone. You can see that in John chapter 1 and verse 1. In the beginning was the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The Jehovah's Witnesses like to say it means the Word was a God, because it doesn't have the word "the" in front of God. However, when it doesn't have the word "the" in front of it, many times it's referring to the characteristics, the nature. It's saying the Word, Jesus Christ, was in nature God. It's describing the character, the nature of the person. Now, we won't even go into the fact that the Jehovah's Witnesses ignore that supposed Greek rule five times in John chapter 1 alone. They don't like it when you point that out, by the way. Really makes them aggravated. But basically, John 1:1 says the Word is God in His nature. So when Paul says that an elder must be a husband of one wife, he's emphasizing a character trait. Something about the man that people could see. So since it's a character trait, it eliminates from consideration any interpretation that would say the qualification depends on the state of his marriage certificate or whether or not his wife is alive. It's all about the man's character. Who is he? What kind of man is he? But the elder must, and it is present tense, he must be one with the character of being a one-woman man. If he ever stops having that characteristic, he is no longer qualified to be an elder. According to Artin Gingrich and some other sources, the phrase husband of one wife, or one-woman man, as we're looking at today, has been found in some first century tomb inscriptions, and they are like our headstones today, talking about, giving a short phrase about the person who has died. And many times the phrase was used to describe someone whose spouse had died years, if not decades, earlier. They were still called, though, the husband of one wife, or a one-woman man, because they were still devoted to that wife who had died many years earlier. It described the characteristic of the person. Obviously, they were not married in that sense because their wife was dead, but they were still a dedicated husband, a one-woman man. The meaning of the phrase husband of one wife didn't mean must have only one wife and that wife still living. At least not how it was used by other people in the first century. The meaning of the phrase wasn't not a polygamist, although that, you know, that would be kind of a given. If you're a one-woman man, that means you're not going to be married to multiple women. But you put all this together and you can see that if you describe someone as a one-woman man today, what would you think? You know, so-and-so is a one-woman man. Well, you'd think that means they're dedicated to their wife. That means they treat their wife with love and respect. They don't go looking at pornography. They don't go lusting after other women. They are a dedicated husband. And according to everything that I've been able to find historically, that's the same way the phrase was used in the first century. So when Paul says that an elder must be a one-woman man or husband of one wife, he's saying an elder must be a dedicated, faithful husband. Now, can you be the most dedicated, faithful husband? There are levels of dedication. Some people are more dedicated to their wives. Other people are less dedicated to their wives. You can be married to your first and only wife. Just imagine for a second, you have a man. He and his wife have been married 40 years, but he treats her like scum. He acts like she can't do anything right. Always badmouths her. Is that somebody who fits the qualification that Paul's talking about? Does he have that character of being a one-woman man who treats his wife right? No. Well, what about someone who's married to his first and only wife, but he goes and looks at pornography? He does not meet this qualification. He does not have the characteristic of being a one-woman man. You can be married to your first and only wife, but if you don't fulfill your responsibility to her, you are not qualified. The elder must be a truly devoted and dedicated husband. If he ever ceases to have that characteristic, he's no longer qualified to be an elder. Now, having said all that, there are some questions that obviously would probably arise. And the first one that usually gets asked is, if the man's wife dies, is he still qualified? Well, this qualification, like all the others, describes a character attribute. When a man's wife dies, does he suddenly cease having that character attribute? Does he stop being that kind of person? Well, this exact phrase, remember, was used regularly in the first century to describe people whose wives had died years earlier. They were still called a one-woman man. So the man is still qualified, though, after the death of his wife, as long as he retains that character trait. Is he still dedicated to her? He's not going to besmudge her name. He's not going to badmouth her after she's gone. He's not going to lust after other women or other women. He still loves her even though she's gone. How many of you have a relative that's died, but you still love your relative that died? You know, be it a grandmother, a spouse, a sibling, or maybe even just a friend. You know, a man is still going to have that characteristic of having love towards his wife. Well, what about if the man or if the wife dies and then he remarries? Is he qualified? Well, we know that remarriage after the death of a spouse is not a sin. 1 Corinthians chapter 7 and verse 39. So really, it all depends on the man and his character. Is he still a devoted husband, a one-woman man? Now, interestingly enough, what I'm about to say may sound like the exact opposite of some of the things you've heard before. A lot of people say when a man's wife dies, he's no longer qualified till he gets married again. I put forth possibly the opposite is true. If a man's wife dies, he's still qualified so long as he keeps that characteristic. However, if he gets remarried, it'd be very smart of him to step down until he's proven himself a devoted husband to his new wife. It takes time for someone to prove themselves a devoted husband. Does it not? It takes time to build that trust and be able to prove it. Proving you're a dedicated husband is not something that happens overnight. It's a long process, especially if early in your marriage you've messed up. It'll take even longer. But for some people, it may only take a few months. If a man marries someone who's cantankerous, someone who is not a very faithful Christian, who's always causing trouble, it might be slightly difficult for him to be as devoted a husband as he should be. And he may no longer have that qualification after he's married and live with someone who's just a pain in the neck, I guess would be one way of putting it. But if a man remarries, can he still be qualified? Yeah, he can still be qualified so long as he shows that he still has that characteristic of being a devoted, dedicated one-woman man. He's not going to lust after other women. He's going to treat his wife right. That's something that the congregation can look at and see. How does he treat his wife? Well, if he treats his wife awful, that's not someone you want as an elder. Period. Well, another question is, can an elder who gets a scriptural divorce still serve? That's a real fun question. Because you have to ask some other questions. What caused the wife to cheat on him in the first place? Was it because of something he did? Was it because of the way he treated her? Was it because he was not showing his dedication and devotion to her? Was it because they constantly fought all the time and he was part of that problem? There's a lot of questions you have to ask as to whether or not a scripturally divorced man could still serve as an elder. A preacher I know who scripturally divorced his wife for adultery said to me, "Brad, 95% of the time, there's no such thing as an innocent party in a divorce. Yes, one person may have cheated and the other didn't, but there are things that were done in that marriage, most likely, that caused the problems, or at least put the split into motion that led to the adultery of the spouse. You know, maybe they don't treat their wives with respect. Maybe they fight all the time. And remember, it takes two to fight. You can't just say, my wife was fighting with me and I did nothing. Whenever I was a kid, we'd ride in the back seat of the car and I'd say, Jeff won't quit fighting with me. And my dad says, it takes two to fight, and pull over and whip us both. Because, you know, if you're really not fighting, the fight ends pretty quickly. But it may not be an intended thing. Sometimes men are not devoted and dedicated to their wives as they should be. And the opposite is true. Many times wives are not devoted and dedicated to their husbands as they should be. And those cause problems in the marriage. It's not an excuse for a spouse to commit adultery. However, there are many times plenty of well-placed blame to go around. Now, the preacher that I mentioned had a scriptural divorce from his wife. They afterwards got remarried, and they've been married another 16 years since then. They worked things out, so the story ended well. But if you have an elder who's married and then he goes through a scriptural divorce, it's a really good idea for him to step down. Just because divorce alone has a stigma, you know, within the church, within religious people, even within the world. People say, oh, you're a leader at a church and you're getting a divorce? You know, that's going to bring a bad name to the church. It's going to bring reproach upon the church, and he really ought to step down. So there's many questions to be dealt with in deciding if a scripturally divorced man was really the one-woman man that he should have been in the first place. Technically, I guess a scripturally divorced man could serve as an elder if he was truly that dedicated, devoted husband who always did everything he could for his wife, and she just cheated on him anyway. However, I don't think that's all that frequent. But since divorce carries that stigma, it'd be best for the man to step down anyway. That way there's not an issue. Just like many other things, if it's going to cause a problem, just don't do it. If there's going to be an issue regarding it, it's best just to step down and there not be a problem at all. Whenever a divorce is filed or announced, an elder probably ought to step down just so he's not a distraction or a detriment to the congregation. And especially if a man is married and then gets a scriptural divorce, it's a really bad idea to make that man an elder after the divorce has already happened. It's really unwise to begin with. But can a scripturally divorced and remarried man serve as an elder? That's a question that gets asked a lot. If the question is it possible for someone who is scripturally divorced and scripturally remarried to serve as an elder, the answer is yes, it is possible. It might be very unwise in many congregations, however. Just like a lot of congregations, it would be a very bad idea for them to hire a preacher who has ever been divorced, just because of the problems it would cause. However, there are many questions which would need to be raised. Does the congregation know for sure that the man was scripturally divorced in the first place? Has he proven himself to be a dedicated husband in this second marriage? Now, you got to remember, though, throughout all of this, the qualification, husband of one wife, is present tense. It means he must now be the dedicated husband that he should be. How many of you have always been the dedicated spouse that you should have been your entire married life? Nobody's raising their hand. Okay, just because you weren't one time in the past doesn't mean you can't change and be the husband of one wife, the one-woman man, the dedicated husband you should be, or the dedicated wife that you should be. Imagine a man who was not a Christian. Whenever he was about 20, he got married. And the woman he got married to ran off with another man, and he got a divorce, scripturally. Years later, he became a Christian. He got married to a woman, scripturally again. And he learned from the Bible how a husband is to treat his wife. He is a dedicated husband. He is devoted to her. He does not look at other women. He doesn't do any of those things. Does he fit the qualification of being a one-woman man, a dedicated husband? He is present tense, a dedicated husband. He is scripturally remarried, even though in the past he wasn't as devoted maybe as he should have been, he is now. And he would then fit this qualification. However, again, because of the idea of divorce and remarriage, it would probably be a bad idea in a lot of congregations to put this man forth as an elder. That's something, though, that has to be decided on a congregational level, because peace and unity in the congregation are important. If it's going to cause problems, if it's going to cause a split, and that has happened in some congregations, when a divorced and remarried man becomes an elder, then he better not become an elder, because we need to keep the congregation together. So basically, throughout all of this, an elder must be a man who's a dedicated husband who loves and respects his wife. Does this apply to all Christians? Absolutely. If you are married, you are to be a dedicated husband or a dedicated wife. God commanded all Christians to love their spouses. Ephesians 5:25 says the husband is to love his wife as Christ loved the church. Titus chapter 2 and verse 4, the older women are to teach the younger women to love their husbands. All Christians are to love their spouses. And the word there is agape. It means to put them above yourself. Be a dedicated spouse. Every Christian is under that commandment. So if you're married, how do you treat your spouse? Wives, do you treat your husband with respect? Husbands, do you respect and treasure your wife? Do you show your devotion to one another? That's really all Paul's getting at here, is he must be a dedicated husband. You know he's only dedicated to that wife. He is faithful to her. It's the most important relationship on this earth for him. Most important overall being the one he has with God. But as far as an earthly relationship, there's no relationship to him more important than to his wife. Is that the kind of person that you are with your spouse? If you're not the person God wants you to be, if you're not showing that dedication to your spouse the way you should, then you're not doing what God commanded, and you need to repent of that sin. I hope all of this made sense tonight. If there's any other questions about it, ask me afterwards, or you know, any hypotheticals that I didn't think of, you put a question in the question box. I'll be happy to cover it at some point. But if you're needing anything tonight, if you're not a Christian, you need to become one. If you are a Christian, if there's problems in your life, why not repent of them now? Be right with God. And if there's anything we as a congregation can do to help you in that, to get right with God, please come as we stand and sing the song that's been selected.